Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, do we have a favorite author of mine here today, an author I have been reading for years. I think I counted the number of books I've read as over 20. And Nana, which I stayed up the last two nights reading, is out now. It is out from Penguin. And Robin Cook, yes, the Robin Cook, is here to talk about it. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
It is such a pleasure. You don't know what your books have meant to me over the years. The pleasure that I've gotten out of reading your books is more than I can ever express to you.
Well, I hope they've scared you a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I get scared with every one.
But that's actually, strangely enough, that was my motivation initially, because I thought somebody should really talk to the general public about what, you know, the dark side of medicine, because it exists, unfortunately.
And it's scary to think that we could go in the hospital and something could something scary like that could happen.
Well, and it happens still more than most people want to believe, and which that's the reason that, you know, if I'm in an accident, I like to have in my wallet, you know, to take me to the Mass General. I don't want to go to. I could list a whole bunch of other hospitals in the local area that I don't want to go to.
Wow. And I'm sure if people knew what they were, they wouldn't want to go either. That's the scary part.
That is the case.
We're putting ourselves in other people's hands completely, and it's a scary thing. It's like taking your car to the mechanic. He could make up any price he wants and expect you to pay it.
Right. And the more you know about it, the scarier it becomes. There's so many places and opportunities for just mistakes,
and sometimes fatal mistakes.
Yes,
and that's where the fear comes in.
But also, the medical profession really has not done a good job about policing itself, which is supposed to be one of the primary roles of a profession. That's why they're allowed a certain status in society, but part of that responsibility is to police oneself, or police the profession, and the medical profession has not done a good job.
Now, your new book, Nana, which I literally did stay up the last two nights reading this book, 5 o'clock the other night, 5 o'clock in the morning, that's when I had to finally go to bed. I couldn't stop reading the book. I mean, this book...
Well, I hope that meant that you were enjoying it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sitting there, and I just couldn't stop reading it. I mean, literally, it was like, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen to this poor woman, Pia? Now, how do you say her last name?
Grazdani.
Grazdani. That's what an interesting name. Now, this is the second book that features her.
Exactly.
But without giving away any of the ending, we know there's going to be a third.
There has to be.
There has to be, for reasons unknown. We have to leave it unknown. But everybody is going to be shocked by the ending of this book, including me. And I still can't believe it. But I cannot wait to read the third one.
Well, actually, there's going to be a book in between. You know, that's part of a technique that I had to learn after I wrote my first book, which very few people read. And I realized that if I have something important that I want to say, which I felt I did, about medicine, I have to learn how to write a book that's fun to read. And, you know, but I didn't know. I had no idea. How do you write a book that's fun to read? So what did I do? I went back and I read a lot of the books that people had voted that they had enjoyed. In other words, a lot of people read a specific book, and so you go, and I read a lot of books. You know, up until that time, because of my medical training, I had not read one, quote, bestseller. Not one. And suddenly, I read, a couple of hundred.
Did that help you become as successful as yet? 100 million copies. It's just staggering. I can't even believe that figure.
I know. I can't either. Because especially if you think about it, if you're ecologically minded, you think how many trees that means.
Have they all been fun to write?
You know, actual writing the book is not the fun part. That's the work part. The fun part is kind of the conception of it, the excitement. If I know that I have a really good idea, like with nano, I mean, nanotechnology is so exciting. It has such promise. but it's also very scary. So that's perfect. Perfect for one of my books. I get very excited about it. I do an enormous amount of research, and with the benefit of my medical education and benefit of knowing people in the profession that I can call up and ask questions or whatnot. So I do a lot of research and kind of then the story starts to fall into place, and then I do an outline, but then I have to sit down and write this book.
Right. Now, all the nanotechnology stuff in the book really is in the process of happening?
What I've done, I don't write science fiction because everybody thinks science fiction means way in the future, intergalactic travel, strange alien life forms, etc. That's not what I write about. I write science fiction, but it's science fiction that's going to happen within the next couple of years. In terms of nanotechnology is all around us already today. Within a decade, it has just flooded. You know, the market is filled with nanotechnology products that nobody even knows about because they're not required to say whether a product has nanotechnology in it. But it's been so successful so quickly that all the R&D that's being done, research and development, is being done behind closed doors. It's kind of a race. It's kind of a Wild West type of race with these companies to do the science to get the patents because they realize that's going to be the source of success in the future. So everything's being done in secret.
You're like, to me, the king of medical thrillers. I mean, there have been so many that have tried it, and nobody has lasted as long as you have. So as far as I'm concerned, you're the best there is writing out there with medical thrillers. And you've lasted long. I mean, this is like book 32 or something.
Yes, it is. It's my 31st book.
Do you get tired of writing them? Do you ever get to the point where you want to retire?
No, it's still as much of a challenge today as it was when I wrote my second book. First book wasn't a challenge. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just thought, you know, you had an idea and you wrote a book and you put it on the shelf and everybody bought it and there you go. Well, that didn't happen. And very few people read my book. But my second book was different because I spent that time and effort to figure out what makes the book fun. It's very similar to what makes a movie fun to watch. I mean, there's certain similarities, and I think we're all much more similar than we are different. And
right.
So the things that make other people enjoy books made me enjoy them. And I was, you know, I picked up a couple of books back then when I was trying to do this. Like a book that jumps to my mind was Jaws.
Oh yeah.
It was fantastic. I couldn't stop reading. I was in the on-call room, supposedly sleeping, and I'm reading Jaws. So you get certain sort of sense about how you deal with information and whatnot. Because, you know, if I wrote a nonfiction book about nanotechnology, which there's been plenty, very few people are going to read it. The only people that will read it are those people who are already knowledgeable about it already.
Right.
It's not going to evoke the interest of the public.
Now, are you still a doctor today, or have you devoted yourself fully to writing?
No, I stay very current in medicine, and still in the hospital, and got back from it. Four-day meeting, actually.
Yep. You're a very busy guy.
Yeah. Well, I actually think of myself. I think of myself as a doctor who happens to be writing at night, rather than a writer who happens to be done.
It's a little hard. I'm getting a little background noise here, but but every one of your books is about a different subject, and I remember that one of the first ones I read was about a sickness that was, they were trying to figure out what was causing this sickness, and what a fascinating book. I mean, that all of your books are like that, though.
Well, they take some issue that I want the public to know something about. You're probably talking about the outbreak, about the Ebola virus.
Yeah, one of the best books I've ever read by you.
Well, but what seems to happen to most people is that whatever is the first book they read, they always think that somehow something special.
Right.
It's nice because I don't really write the same book over and over again. No, it's not like those writers who write about serial killers. Those books are the same. You know, it's very simple. Somebody who's something that's killing a lot of people and they got a.
So you're always tackling something new. There's always something new and exciting you can write about.
Exactly. Aren't I lucky? Because if I were writing 50 years ago, I would have run out of subject matter. But
right.
Things are changing so rapidly in terms of medical technology. Actually, even the sociology of medicine is changing. And very rapidly. And I have to say that I feel, I don't know how many other people feel this way, that my books have actually helped launch the whole sort of sense of medical ethics. Before Coma came out, there really wasn't much talk about medical ethics or whatnot.
I still remember that book today, just how scary it was to read and watch the movie. And it was directed by Michael Crichton in the movie, is that true?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Who coincidentally wrote a huge book about nanotechnology called Prey, which was fantastic.
Yep. And he and I, we became friends at one point, and we kind of toyed around with the idea, wouldn't it be fun to do a project together sometime, because we both had sort of a similar kind of attitude towards medicine and medical technology. And it was really fun that it came to pass.
Now, what is this thing on the cover? It looks like a big octopus, but I don't see eight legs, though.
Well, it's sort of an artist's sort of conception of one of these nanorobots.
Ah, nanobots, they're called for sure, right?
Right. And so it's something that's, as you remember reading the book, they're really trying to develop these nanorobots to eat up bacteria and rogue proteins. But in order to get the money for that, they're trying to get the Chinese to invest. And so in order to encourage them, they have to give the Chinese something immediately. And the Chinese, as you know, are very, very eager to compete on the world stage in terms of athletics. They think it's a reflection of their society in kind of a way somewhat similar to the way the Soviets felt back during the Soviet time. And so in order to get them to invest the money in the nanorobots to deal with bacteria and rogue proteins, they're going to give them an opportunity to increase the stamina of their athletes by creating an artificial red blood cell, which actually is on the drawing board.
Now, there's also a lot of biking stuff in this book. The word Peloton, which I have only recently ever... I know there's a magazine called Peloton, and I had no idea what it was. And do you bicycle a lot? Is that where you get a lot of your information from?
I do, yeah. What happened was, I was a daily basketball player, and... actually finally becoming fairly good at it. And lo and behold, I developed some trouble with my knees, and so I've had to switch to biking. And I've gotten a lot of pleasure out of biking. And so it was one of the things that I thought, well, I've learned a bit about it. Why don't I use this, my knowledge and interest, and it's interesting because I've already gotten some feedback. feedback from some biking people. It was a professional bicyclist that I had read the book very early on just to see what he thought. And he was really amazed because he called me up just after he just started the book, and he said, that route that you describe in Colorado was a route that I did all the time. He went to the University of Colorado. So that was kind of fun.
That's interesting. Now, are you done with Jack Stapleton and Laurie Montgomery? There's like 10 books of it with them in it. Are you done with those characters?
No. I think they still interest me. And they interest me because forensic pathology interests me so much. And that I can see that that when you think up storylines, who is the one that is most likely to really know what's going on? And it turns out to be the forensic pathologist. So I'm sure I'll be going back. And there are such interesting characters. They've developed a life of their own to some degree. So I'm sure I'll go back to them.
Now, why don't you describe the Nano, the book? And so anybody who hasn't read it, they're all thinking, no, tell me what the book's about. So why don't you describe what it's about?
Well, it's a book that's written to try to get people to understand a little bit about nanotechnology and how it's going to affect medicine. What's sort of in the store within the next, say, 4 or 5 years. That's the major issue. And the major issue, of course, is the fact that because it's so successful so quickly, that they really have fallen behind in terms of safety, health and safety and environmental issues. That, to me, is the major message of the book, that I really, really think that the public, the general public, through their representatives, should try to influence the government to demand more testing in terms of safety and environment. So, anyway, that's the issue behind the book, and the book involves a character that I developed from my previous book, who's a young woman. She was a medical student in the first book. She's now graduated from medical school.
Oh, what a spitfire she is. Oh, my gosh. This woman's not afraid of anything.
She's a damaged character in a certain sense.
Are you like that, too?
No. I did not experience the terrible childhood that she did, that she went through the foster care system in New York City. And
I was thinking more of the fact that she's fearless and she speaks her mind and isn't afraid to hold back at all. Is that the way you are, too?
I suppose to some degree. I've always been a little bit forward.
Well, look where it's gotten you. I mean, you're one of the most successful writers in the history of thriller writing.
Well, and it's strange, because I never expected my books were going to be so popular overseas.
Well, didn't you think Coma would have a huge impact after you wrote it?
Yeah, I still felt it was something to do with the United States, the fact that doctors are getting too involved in business and really sort of losing their way. I didn't realize that these issues of medicine are more universal than I thought they were more of the United States, because we don't have an appropriate single-payer plan here. We don't have the concept that one of the functions of government should be the health of its people. I feel health, education, and defense are the three things the government should be doing. Now, you know, there's lots of other things, perhaps, but those three things are the core things the government is doing. And it's amazing that this country, because of a strange set of circumstances, has missed one-third of the major things, and we do not have a sensible, real good sort of basic health system in this country. So that is reflected in my books.
How many countries are your books popular? I can only imagine. I mean, it must be, it's got to be over 30.
Oh, yeah, I think that the last time I counted, or at least I think someone else did, or something, that it was in like 40 languages or something like that.
Amazing. Your success is just phenomenal. I mean, I think it's due, in my estimation, it's due because your books are just so interesting all the time. They're always interesting. There's always something coming up. And you have the nastiest villains in your book. the nastiest, most disgusting people sometimes.
They can be flawed, and usually the bad ones are flawed in a very typical way. But even this, in Nano, the main character is flawed, too. She has an adult attachment disorder. She really has trouble making relationships with people because she's immediately on guard with everyone, and particularly men. And the fact of the matter is that going through the foster care system, she truly was abused and then suddenly kicked out. That's what happens in foster care. You get abused until you're 18, and then you're kicked out.
Now, do you have a plan as far as how many books she's going to be in, or is it just you're going to write as you go along?
I don't have any great plan. In fact, when I first created her, I didn't even know I was going to use her for another book. But I really enjoyed or felt that it was saying something about, again, personality disorders. And here's an individual who has it. She's got some good characteristics as well. She doesn't tolerate fools too well, and she's very motivated.
I have a feeling you're like that too, not tolerating fools very well.
I suppose.
I mean, you sound like you're very, you know what you like. You know what kind of a doctor is going to be good for you, and you're very sure of yourself, which is good, which is great. I mean, we get the advantage of reading your books and reading about things that you know a lot about.
Well, thank you. I felt, you know, I wanted to become a doctor, and then as I became a doctor during the process, I realized that how different it was than what I had thought it was going to be, and partially from the way medicine had been presented to me in the media, in terms of TV shows, movies, books, etc. And it was very, very different, and which is what propelled me to write my first book, that I thought that someone should write about medicine the way it really is and not the way people want it to be.
Mm-hmm. You gotta give people the facts. I mean, people have a right to know.
That's how I feel. I mean, the whole ethical basis of medicine is informed consent. In other words, we allow ourselves to be worked on by doctors in medicine because we've been told that the benefit is going to outweigh the risk. But if people don't know, there are dangerous doctors out there and there are dangerous hospitals out there. If they don't know that, then there's not a lot of informed consent going on.
Now, you're responsible for my one friend who I decided I was going to give a signed book to. I have never gotten a better reaction than when I gave to her. She almost screamed at me. She was so happy. I mean, it just really made her day. And her name is Debbie, and she may be out there listening right now, but she's even more of a fan than I am, but to be able to do that, thanks to you, I was able to do that, and believe me, it changed my life. I mean, when you do something nice for somebody, look at the way it changes who we are.
I have to say that some of the letters that I've gotten from people in which having read a book of mine influenced their life in some sort of positive way. I wrote a book called Toxin. I got a lot of mail.
Oh, yeah.
Or people telling me that they've stopped eating hamburger. Now, of course, that happened to me when I did the research.
Right.
But at the same time, that was not the message of the book. But I've gotten quite a bit of mail from people saying that by reading my books, they've decided to go into medicine or into biotech or whatever. In fact, I even got a letter from a woman who read my book Sphinx and decided to become an Egyptologist.
Wow.
And, I mean, what a wonderful feeling that is for someone like myself as a writer. I mean, I get such joy out of people just saying that they enjoyed a book. And yet, then it goes even farther than that when someone says, not only did I enjoy your book for those few hours when I was actually reading it, but that the information affected my life in some sort of form or fashion.
And right.
That's the best for me as a writer, because that's really what I set out to try to do.
Now, you said P is going to be back, not in the next book, but the book after. So 2013, 14?
You know, I'm writing the next book right now, and she's not in it yet. But it's the next book. She has a friend in this book, and her friend is this, had been a medical student with her, tried to have a relationship with her all through.
George, you were talking about George.
And George now has thought he was chasing her, and he's in a residency in Southern California. And so the next book really is about George. George and realizing how bad the decisions that have been made in terms of, quote, health care reform in this country really are.
So he's in the next book, but she will definitely be back. I can't wait for that book. I mean, I'm literally chomping at the bit, and everybody who reads Nano is going to know exactly what I mean, and that's, I'm sure there's going to be millions that read it.
Right. It's a, I did, I constructed it, you know, what they call like a cliffhanger. Okay, you know, what's going to happen here? And so I'm very interested to see if readers tend to enjoy that or if readers...
I think it's good. It's good to get somebody wanting the next book. I mean, you always want them to want the next book. I mean, you had no problem with that, obviously, over the years you've been so successful, but...
That's true, but, you know, generally my editors have always encouraged me to have... You know, endings that are decisive, and you kind of wrap everything up. And it was on my decision against advice to do this ending. And and it's in a certain sense hearkening back to Coma. Coma was the same way, and it was only my second book, and I left it up in the air. You didn't know whether the main character, Susan Wheeler, lived through her operation or not.
Right. I like the fact what you did with Nano. It makes me want to read the next one, and I like that. It's different from the new. I mean, you get so much of the same thing with fiction nowadays. Unfortunately, you got some great ones, and then you got ones that tend to write the same book every time. And I want something different. This was something different. This was a shocking ending, and I like that. I like the fact that I can't wait to the story continues. Sort of like Harry Potter. We all know what Harry Potter did for everybody.
That's right.
I mean, more of the story. We wonder what are they going to talk about next? What's going to be the next topic? And that's always fun. It's always fun to think about, and I'm sure it's fun for you to try to decide what it's going to be like. But as fans, we just enjoy your books so much. I mean, it's the pleasure that I've gotten out of your books is just it'll last with me through my whole lifetime.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Now you live in Florida and New Hampshire. Is that?
Yes.
I don't know why I almost said Vermont. I have no idea. I'm thinking of the... But that's where... Have you always lived there, or have you bounced around the country a lot?
I started out in New York. I was a New Yorker. I was born in Brooklyn, and I went to northern New Jersey for middle school and high school, and then went to Connecticut for college.
You've been a lot of places.
New York, back to New York for medical school, and then in the military, I got to move around a bit. And,
oh yeah, I forgot you were in the military. Yeah.
And then residency. I've done several residencies, and ended up doing a residency, a final residency in Boston at Harvard, and then haven't looked back.
I find it interesting that one of your rivals, I should say rivals, I don't know how you consider people that write the same kind of books as you are. I'm sure you're all friendly. But Michael Palmer has gotten away from writing the medical thriller and is now writing just regular thrillers without much medical stuff in them, although they occasionally have something medical in them. But I think that it's sort of like everybody's gotten out of the way because they know you're the best.
Hmm.
I mean, that's how I see it. I don't know how you see it.
I just am much more attuned to all the things that are going on in terms of bioscience and its impact on medicine. So that's really where I'm staying.
Right. I don't hear you interviewed very much. This is such a treat for me because I've been trying to get you and try to get an interview with you for a couple of years now, and you're.
Oh, I'm sorry. I really enjoyed it, but I do have another live interview coming up.
Right. It's been such a pleasure, Robin Cook. The new book is called Nano. It is out from Putnam in all your bookstores now. Whether you read it, you're going to love it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
It's been great fun. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.